Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. From the start, we were told the joint U.S.-Israel attack on Iran was about regime change. This has not happened. What has happened is a regional war and growing escalation. Trump may have committed the greatest blunder in American foreign policy history. Crosstalking the war on Iran, I'm joined by my guest, Mohammad Mirani, in Tehran. He is a professor at the University of Tehran. Also in Tehran, we have Hassan Akhmadian. He is an assistant professor of Middle East and North Africa Studies at the University of Tehran. And in Washington, we cross to Miko Peled. He is the founder and president of Palestine House of Freedom in Washington, D.C., and author of The General's Son. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Mohammad Mirani, if I can go to you first in Tehran. First of all, tell us the conditions that you and our other guests on the panel are experiencing here, and what is the mood, the attitude that is happening all across the country? This was supposed to be regime change. It hasn't happened. Go ahead.
I think what the United States did was the exact opposite of what it intended by murdering Ayatollah Khamenei. He has made him into a martyr, and that has made Iranians extraordinarily angry. In fact, I've spoken to some people whose views over the past few months were more liberal and more optimistic towards the West that have completely changed. Their views have become much more realistic after seeing the United States bomb schools and slaughtering little girls, and Western media completely ignoring it, but the bombing of hospitals, the double tap strikes in Tehran that we've seen on many occasions. And my good friend, Dr. Ahmadian, could probably give you more such examples. But Ayatollah Khamenei's martyrdom has caused the country to become even more united than ever before. And we see the sympathy for Iran really across the globe, especially in this region. We see in Iraq and in elsewhere where people are on the streets in Bahrain, people are outraged. And that is going to make things much worse for the United States. The Americans were calling, Trump was calling for people to come to the streets. And they did come to the streets, but for the exact opposite reason that he expected. Last night and the night before, we saw across the country, huge crowds, and the Americans have been bombing cities across the country. And in Tehran, both last night and the night before, there were huge crowds in different parts of the city. They had 20 different gatherings at night. And I put some of them in my Telegram channel so that people could see both last night and the night before. People in massive numbers were on the streets as air defense was working, as the city was being bombed. And they refuse to budge, men and women. This is the most foolish and, of course, immoral and ugly act that the Americans could have committed, murdering Ayatollah Khamenei, murdering little girls, murdering people in hospitals, bombing infrastructure that belongs to ordinary people. What the Americans want to do is to break up the foundations upon which civil society functions.
Well, see,
why? Because they failed in bombing Iran and destroying Iran's missile and drone capabilities, so they take it out on the people.
Yes. Hassan, you know, there are two things in play here. Has Trump bitten off more than he can chew? And then the flip side of that is, are what we're seeing now is a war of attrition? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think President Trump was basically sleepwalked into a quagmire by the Israelis. They told him that Iran is weak. He's seeing how weak Iran now in his bases and his forces that are under attack. Israel is also tasting the weakness of Iran with its missiles hitting hard where it hurt. And I think that the other thing that was told to Trump that walked him into this war was that, well, the Iranians will turn against their system as soon as because this is a political system based on a single person, as their propaganda goes, and they have been prisoners of their propaganda. With the murdering of the supreme leader, actually, we saw the opposite, as Professor Marandi has been described. I think those premises that were based, that the war was based on, have all been shattered by the reality on the ground. We see an attrition war. President Trump was told by the Israelis that this will be an easy win. Iran is on its knees. Now the Iranians are having the escalation dominance. They are dictating the terms of the conflict. And I think we will move forward and we'll see more surprises for the Israelis and the Americans as the past 3 days. So it's a war of attrition. It's a war of choice for the United States and Israel. It was never an Iranian intention to get into a conflict, but now that they imposed a war, the Iranians won't get out of it before making sure that not only a ceasefire, but also a deterrence that would put a cap on their escalation moving forward. They can't leave their country under threat continuously. They have to show force. They have to exact more pain to make sure that they won't turn again once more in 6-7 months to attack the country again. So it's about deterrence more than a ceasefire for Iran.
Well, I hope Iran will learn from the Russians. When someone asks you for a ceasefire, it means they're losing and you're winning. Miko, one of the most remarkable things about this incredible blunder is that you have in Israel a prime minister that finally convinced an American president to go to war for it against Iran. What is the, I mean, it seems very kind of messianic thinking that's coming out of Israeli politics here. What is the sentiment there? Are they winning, quote unquote? Mika.
Well, it's such a horrific, immoral act of terrorism that, you know, words fail you to describe what this is. And the mood is in Israel so far is jubilant. They think they're winning. They think they're doing great things. The Israeli press, there's no dissent whatsoever. But I think we need to remember that both Netanyahu and Trump are facing some very difficult elections coming up. And I think we have to remember that this is related to that. Albeit strategically and politically, this is madness, because I agree with the other speakers. There's no way the United States is going to win this war. There's no way that the Israelis are going to win this war. This is going to be catastrophic for them, strategically, geopolitically, and internally as well. Here in the United States, you hear, you know, senators, politicians that otherwise wouldn't have responded this way, condemning the war, condemning the killing of civilians, and expressing just the madness of this idea that attacking Iran will somehow benefit anyone in any way, and that they could either topple the regime or get rid of their weapons. I mean, it's such a level of ignorance and hubris that is really hard to believe. I'm rarely surprised by things that happen in the region in Western Asia, and this was a shocker. I didn't think they were that stupid. I didn't think they would be acting against their own interests in such a
well,
insane
way.
And
it's exactly right about going against your interests. Let me go to Mohammed Mirandi back in Tehran. I mean, one of the things that I think that will be learned from all of this is that all of the Gulf monarchies, they chose very badly, haven't they? They've chosen very, because they, you know, the Iran obviously would like to have American bases removed, but the Israelis want the Americans out of the monarchy, out of the monarch states as well. And so it shows that they've chosen very, very badly, and the U.S. is not there to save them. Mohammed.
Oh, you're absolutely correct. And I agree with everything that your two other excellent guests have said. The Arab regimes in the Persian Gulf, these family dictatorships, they assisted Saddam Hussein when he invaded Iran, along with the West. And the West gave Saddam chemical weapons. They financed everything. And yet after the war, and when Saddam invaded Kuwait, Iran never took revenge on them. Iran wanted to have good relations, even though they paid hundreds of billions of dollars then, that would be like $1 trillion now, to Saddam to kill Iranians, to help him build those chemical weapons factories that the Germans were bringing to Iraq so that they could together kill Iranians and Iraqis. So instead of learning from that experience, they did the same thing again. They allowed the Americans to have bases. And Peter, the bases are not just simple bases. They've created networks of infrastructure across the Persian Gulf. They own the place, the Americans. Mm-hmm. And these despots thought that the Americans cared about them. This was all about Israel and the Israeli regime. And Tucker Carlson, who's very influential and very in the know in Washington, he knows what's going on. He said this. Yeah. And now recently we saw a Saudi official say the same thing, that when we needed them, they weren't there for us. Well, it was obvious from day one, they were never there for you. When the U.S. ambassador says that if the Israeli regime takes the entire region, that's fine.
Let them have it. Let them have it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's always been unofficial U.S. policy. I was only surprised that he said it out loud, but I was confident that this was always the policy. And it's the informal policy of the Europeans and the collective West as well.
Gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue the war on Iran. Plus, it's very nice to not have to listen to these platitudes about democracy and women's rights anymore. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the war on Iran. Okay, let's go back to Hassan in Tehran. I had in my introduction that this is a blunder of an unbelievable magnitude that will be associated with Trump's legacy forever, and the implications of which will probably live for a generation, if not longer. But in Iran's case, strategically thinking, all it has to do is survive, and it wins. You can't say that about the policy from coming out of Washington and Tel Aviv. They have to win and have Iran destroyed. That's not going to happen. So they put themselves in a kind of a geopolitical pickle, as it were. Hassan.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with you. I think the calculus there was that Iran is weakened enough for them to destroy it, to bring the political system down. That was very much sold to the Americans. I think the Americans are doing Israeli bidding. There is no reason for them. There is nothing for them in it to attack a country like Iran. They are doing Israeli bidding. And as you said, this will be hunting the legacy, their legacy, just as Iraq, especially that Iran is not a case like Iraq. Iran is inflicting pain. And I would disagree a bit with what you said, that Iran has to survive. Iran is actually going hard against them. And I think it will up the ante moving forward to inflict more pain, because that pain is to guarantee them not attack the country that is independent of them and didn't attack them and didn't initiate an aggression on them. So I think moving forward, I expect a more, harder Iranian targeting of American and Israeli bases. And I think that will turn the tide to Iran's favor moving forward, because for Iran, as I said earlier, ceasefire is not an issue at this point. It wants to push back. It wants to hurt the aggressor, and then it will talk about ceasefire. And I think that's the main strategic calculus. Now with Hezbollah and other resistance movement joining in, I think the ceasefire will be a regional one, i.e. it's not like before the war. You can't target Lebanon and expect Iran or Iraq to stay silent. I think that Hezbollah made a very strategic right strategic decision in entering this, because it will be part of the ceasefire, a regional one, where attacking a single party would return, would come to Israel with a multiple parties attacking or retaliating against it. A ceasefire can only be regional for it to last, because when there were singular ceasefire for, between the Americans and the Iranians, the Israelis and the Lebanese, and the Israelis and Yemenis, they violated all of them. The way out of this is a regional ceasefire. Otherwise, they might choose to violate, and they will choose to violate the ceasefires they just as they did before the war.
Well, I mean, I think, gentlemen, what we've learned here is that agreements don't really mean much anymore, and it's, you have to have force, and you have to have lethal force to defend your position. That's the message everyone's learning. Miko, what is the capacity for the Israelis to, when it comes to the pain that we've been talking about on this program? At the end of the 12-day war, they yelled out, "Uncle." They needed Trump to come in and get a lull in the fighting, because that's what we saw up until the conflict continuing a few days ago. So, I mean, can the Israelis accept that kind of pain, because everybody else in the region has to accept it?
Well, the Zionist propaganda machine is very, very effective. I read the Hebrew News every day, and the propaganda is insane. You know, how they accomplish this and accomplish that and accomplish this, and there's very little about what they lost, and they're very, very strategic about that. So Israelis are living in this bubble, thinking that they're winning. And of course, this collaboration with the Americans, with Trump, is every Israeli prime minister's dream, you know, to be able to attack evil Iran, quote unquote, together, you know, this strategic and working together and attacking together. This is something that no Israeli prime minister has ever had. So this is, you know, as far as they're concerned, it's all a win, even though, of course, I agree with what's been said. There's no way that they're going to win this. They're going to be punished very heavily. I think both the U.S. and Israel have completely miscalculated. They've taken, I think, the past restraint and responsibility that the Iran has shown over the years as weakness. And now I think they're going to learn that there's no weakness there. And I'll say just one more thing, which is that if we look back, excuse me, globally, we see Cuba's being strangulated.
Yep.
Palestine, there's a genocide. In Venezuela, they've invaded, and now they're attacking Iran. This is white supremacist imperialism, you know, all over the world. This is absolutely what it is. And again, I'll say, I think with Iran is a bridge too far, and they're going to be learning a very difficult lesson.
Yeah, Mohammed, it seems to me, if we look at it globally here, first of all, I think we are in the Third World War. Maybe future historians will give us a date that we are not aware of at the moment, but it's already started. And Iran is being targeted now because it's Russia and then it's China. That's why the struggle for the Iranian people is so important to the global South, because this is what I think is a game changer. I think the fortitude of Iran will prevail, mostly because it's right. It's morally right. I don't give up on that category. Go ahead, Mohammed.
Well, absolutely. Iran is morally right, and they are morally bankrupt. They are led by the Epstein class. And increasingly, people across the world are seeing this. After Gaza, after the genocide there, and the murderous and genocidal behavior in Lebanon, and of course the Epstein files that we've been able to see a tiny bit of them, and what we've seen makes us sick. But and I also agree that Iran's past restraint, and this is something that I personally, and I think Dr. Ahmadian probably did as well, I personally told people who I knew that the West is misunderstanding your behavior. They think that your restraint is kind of your weakness, where it's not. But finally, with the actions of the Iranians during the past few days, I think it's become clear that Iran is much stronger than they imagined. And the Iranian people have a capacity to withstand what is being thrown at them, especially the ideological belief among Iranians, the issue of the grandson of the Holy Prophet and Karbala. It creates a particular resilience, and there's a particular strong view of supporting the oppressed and confronting the oppressor in Shia ideology, which makes it all the more difficult for the United States. And the Iranians have been brilliant. They have created a defense system, very low cost, indigenous technology, deep underground, that has been able to beat back the superpower along with its sidekick, or maybe the superpower is a sidekick.
But in any case, whatever direction. Yeah, right. Okay.
Whatever that relationship is. But I agree with you completely. This is a game changer. The United States already, during these past few days, their image has been crumbling because Iran has been hitting back and it's not stopping, and the United States can do nothing about it. And its proxies in the Persian Gulf that have assisted the United States, thinking that they can have their cake and eat it too, now they're seeing that they're very vulnerable. And it will never be the same for the Emirates or Qatar or any of these tiny entities with hundreds of thousands of passport holders and who have nothing but gas or oil that's made them wealthy. Nothing is ever going to be the same for them again. And my expectation of the Iranian government in future is to demand compensation from each and every one of these countries that hosted U.S. bases. It is really disappointing, though, to see Turkey continuing to transport oil and allowing AWACS jets from NATO to collect information for the U.S. and U.S. bases in Turkey to be used, and Jordan and the Saudis giving the Americans air bases to use against Iran. But despite all that, and the Europeans and the West collectively supporting this, Iran's battle plan has been extraordinary.
We're almost on time. I want to give Hassan a shot at here. You know, the word ceasefire has been brought up. I will revisit it, but in a very different way. If there are going to be talks of a ceasefire, it's going to be a list that Iran comes up with, and it's going to say, these are the things that we're going to talk about, and there's not going to be much negotiation. You can sit down, and we can talk, or we can continue. What I'm trying to get at, this circus, this theater of negotiations we saw for the last year, is going to be flipped on its face. Go ahead, Hassan.
Absolutely, I agree with you. As I said, the escalation dominance is now in the hand of Iran, because what the Americans were told, that Iran is weak, it was a lie. They were dragged based on that premise, but now they're facing the reality that Iran is strong and can withstand the United States, Israel, and the logistics of the entire NATO supporting these two aggressors. So that's something they didn't expect, and I think moving forward, the Iranians, as I said, will dictate the terms. It's not about a ceasefire. That's what I meant. The Iranians will have a list. They will tell them that anything that can happen or repeat such an aggression would be fair game for the Iranians. I don't think the Iranians will be tolerant to U.S. bases, to U.S. forces, to U.S. aircraft carriers accumulating force around them, even if they don't initiate war, because the Iranians have a case to make to the world. These forces are there to hurt us, to attack us. Yes. So I think the intolerance will dictate the terms that the Iranians will bring to the table, and eventually the United States and Israel have no other choice but to agree to a ceasefire based on those terms, because Iranians will continue.
What I'm trying to say is they're going to have to swallow some of the medicine that they've dished out to the global south Well, for about 500 years, but that's another topic for another program. I want to thank my guests in Tehran and in Washington. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.